content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
One Life Radio appreciates the support from our sponsors. Make sure you check out these great companies. Sun Warrior, the pioneers of plant-based protein. Go to sunwarrior.com and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. Enviromedica, makers of Terraflora and new Immuniflora. Learn more at enviromedica.com. Castor and Pollux, extraordinary pet food that has set the new standard of purposeful pet food. Paleo Magazine is now all digital, so you can go to paleomagazine.com and subscribe. Also, the Wellbeing Journal, combining physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and social aspects of health. Veg World Magazine. Sign up and get a free online subscription at vegworldmag.com. The International Society of Sports Nutrition, the only nonprofit academic society dedicated to sports nutrition and supplementation. Learn more at sportsnutritionsociety.org. And Thorne Research, redefining what it means to be well and pushing the limits of human potential. Go to the sponsor page at oneliferadio.com for links and listener discounts. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio.
You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior, broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia, as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. Hey, Junior.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. No complaints on this end.
No complaints on that end?
Nope.
Well, I've been busy right up until kickoff. I've just been so busy this morning.
You still playing nurse or got other things going on?
Yeah. I was back at the pet hospital this morning, Dr. Jimmy Norris. My cat now is on a feeding tube, but Butters is in studio with me, the one that was in critical condition like 10 days ago.
Uh-huh.
And he actually, for the first time today, came up to the door, the first time in weeks, and wanted in. And so, I got Butters doing the show. He's my co-host today.
Yeah, you got to let him in then. So.
Of course. I'm thinking maybe I upset him so much that he went into a spin. I don't know. By not letting him in the studio, because typically he's up on the desk and all kinds of crazy stuff. But
oh. Well,
oh,
at least
my
he's
goodness.
Doing better. So that's good.
Yeah, he's doing better. And thank you for asking. We all get through life, right?
Yeah.
One day at a time.
Absolutely.
Don't look back. Don't look forward. Just, stay right where you are. And don't worry about things. But, that's a big thing, is learning not to worry about things that you can't really control.
It's one of the hardest things for me to learn. I'm still learning it to this day.
Me too.
But I have learned a
lot. You sound like me.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to say this correctly. I've learned a lot more to let things go a little bit easier. I'm still not completely good at it, but, this pandemic has really showed me that not everything is as serious as I always think it is,
So. Right. Well, it's an art, and there's a lot of people out there suffering, and that's what we all need to remember, is that, we're all suffering through this together, and show more kindness, compassion, forgiveness, all those things that actually make you feel better.
I
got some news this morning from somebody about someone that's really been suffering, and all I can say is it explains a lot, it just explains a lot. And we all have to keep our hearts open and just be forgiving, but we've got a great show today. At the half, we've got an incredible man. I just can't wait to talk to him. His name is Warren Rustand, and he is an entrepreneur, corporate leader, and the Forbes books author of The Leader Within Us, Mindset, Principles, and Tools for a Life by Design. He has served on appointments and cabinet secretary to President Ford and a lot of other cool stuff. This guy's just incredible. He's got that incredible book I just ordered, actually, on Amazon. Can't wait to talk to him. And, of course, our regular guest expert, Dewan Bennett, is with us. Are you on the line?
Well, I've got Warren's on first. I have him. Dewan's coming up with a half.
Oh, my gosh. Did how did I mix that up?
I don't know. I didn't know if it switched on me, too. Warren is on hold. So.
All right. Well, I'm warmed up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let me complete reading the bio of Warren Rustand, okay? As I said, he is an entrepreneur, corporate leader, and the Forbes books author of The Leader Within Us, Mindset, Principles, and Tools for a Life by Design. He selected as a White House Fellow in 1973. Warren was a special assistant to the Secretary of Commerce Anderson co-led the first ever executive level trade mission to the Soviet Union. He also served as appointments and cabinet secretary, as I said, to Gerald Ford earlier, and a former academic All-American basketball player at the University of Arizona. Rustand has been a CEO of 6 companies and has served on the board of directors of more than 50 for-profit and nonprofit organizations. He is currently the Dean of Learning for Entrepreneurs Organization, EO, Global Leadership Academy. It is an honor and a pleasure to introduce Warren Rustand. Thank you so much for jumping on the air with us here at One Life Radio today.
Bernadette, thank you so much. It's great to be with you, and I've loved the discussion between you and Junior. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And I didn't know you were on the line, you know, and so I apologize for that, but I'm glad you enjoyed it. You know, it is fun to open the show and just talk a little bit, you know, warm yourself up before you get rolling. I always like the show better when we get to do that. And I love that you appreciated it. So thank you so much for that. But your book is amazing. Okay. Your bio is amazing. The history that you've had. So, you know, before we dive into the topic, will you tell us a little bit about your time working in the White House?
Well, it was a fascinating time, and it's not unlike some of the things we're seeing right now. As you may recall, during that era, President Richard Nixon had been accused of cover-up of a felony, and on August 6, 1974, I was then working for Vice President Gerald Ford as special assistant to him. We've got the word that the Supreme Court had released what are called the smoking gun tapes, which implicated the President of the United States in a felony cover-up. The next day, a congressional delegation of senators and congressmen came down to meet with President Nixon and told him that his support in the Senate had eroded, and he really only had one of two options, either resign the presidency or be impeached. And so that was an interesting process. And I was with the Vice President the night he heard the very famous words that have been written about Mr. Vice President, prepare to be president. He had just 2 days to make the transition to the presidency. Nixon did resign, and Gerald Ford became the president. I didn't know if he'd actually thought about being president or not. And when he heard those words, he turned to me and said, have the following 6 people here for a meeting at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning for the transition to the presidency. He had not only thought about it, he knew the people he wanted closest to him, and the next morning at that meeting, he had a plan for that transition for the presidency. So he was well prepared. He had thought about it and a clear vision of what he wanted to accomplish.
Wow. What was that like for you? You know, you were...
Well, I was 29 years old, Bernadette. Wow. I'm an old farm kid from Minnesota, and so I was 29 years old. I'd been selected as White House Fellow, and that's how I got there. And it was an amazing learning experience, being in the middle of history at that moment in time. In fact, the opening story in my book is about that precise moment and what that felt like. And what it was like to see someone transitioning to the presidency, a very, very clear transfer of power, and how he assumed that office with grace and humility and thoughtfulness. And it was a great learning experience for me as a young man.
I can only imagine, 29 years old. I was going to ask you, what your background was, where you were born and raised, because I think that people love to know that. I mean, I do. I'm very curious by nature, but especially about someone who has achieved such greatness, such as you. So, you know, what was it like growing up in Minnesota? Pretty cold.
Well,
huh?
It was cold. It was cold. I mean, that's the most important thing. It was really cold. I was born in poverty, and we grew our crops and we grew our gardens, and that's what we ate and that's what we canned and preserved for the winter. I mean, it was tough. We had no indoor plumbing, very limited indoor electricity. It was a difficult and challenging time, but my dad became a good farmer, ultimately buying a couple of farms. He was my greatest teacher. I would sit on his lap and he would recite poetry. He'd talk about great books. He would talk about places he had traveled. He was really preparing his only son for a life unlike his own on the farm. He was saying to me, there are big things out there. Go do big things. And he was really the first person and the most influential person in my life because he was drawing a picture for me was different than the one we were actually living. And I feel that's what mentors do. That's what coaches do. That's what I'm helping other CEOs do now, is to understand the bigger picture. But it was a wonderful experience. I love animals. So what happened when my wife and I got married, we said, you know, we want our kids to be raised on a farm just like I was. And so we bought a farm. We have 3 generations living on a farm in the middle of Tucson, Arizona. We've got 60 acres, and we have goats and pigs and sheep and chickens and dogs. And we have 7 children and 19 grandchildren all living there together with us. It's a lot of fun.
Wow. Oh my gosh, that sounds like heaven to me. That sounds like heaven.
Fun.
I'm such a an animal girl. I'm such a family girl. I feel sometimes my property that I live on, I have 3.5 acres here on the outskirts of Dallas, but I love all the wildlife out here. I love all the animals that I get to rescue, and having a place to call home that's got some nature, surrounding it. It's important, I think, for our wellness. If you can, I mean, I guess some people love the city life, and that's okay too, but it sounds like paradise, what you just described. Junior, would you agree?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, that's my dream, is to one day have a lot of land and animals. And, man, yep. That sounds great, having your whole family right there. That's, awesome.
Yeah. How beautiful is
that?
That's
really fun.
Yeah,
I think the other thing, Bernadette, if I may, I think the other thing that space does and land does is it makes us more tranquil, more serene, more peaceful.
Yeah.
I think it helps our soul, and I think it's so good for us to be in nature and to be surrounded by animals and to appreciate all of that, I think helps us in so many ways. For instance, today I've got a really busy day, and at the end of the day I know that I'm going to take a couple of grandchildren and we're going to go muck out the corrals. We're going to shovel manure. And I think that's a way of staying humble. There are some things we need to do that keep us in our space that's important.
Oh, you just touched on one of my favorite words, being humble. And, for those maybe just now joining us, getting in their car, we are on the line with Warren Rustand. He is an entrepreneur, corporate leader, and the Forbes Books author of The Leader Within Us. How important is humility when it comes to success?
Well, it's really important, and I think as I look at the top five, I've had a chance to associate with military leaders, political leaders, corporate leaders my whole life, and as I look at the most successful people, I think it's the number one quality. The most successful people that I've been around have been the most humble.
Yeah, I would agree.
They have a sense of who they are, right, and what their purpose is. But if you looked at those top five qualities, it'd be humility number one, the ability to listen number two, the ability to communicate, number three, then EQ, which is emotional intelligence, and then last of the five, top five, would be IQ. And I think if we understand that there are some qualities that we can exhibit and practice every day that are going to make us better as a person, make us show up as a better person.
I couldn't agree more. This is wonderful conversation, by the way. What great radio. Someone said yesterday in a business meeting that radio is the theater of the mind. And I wanted to share that with you. I had it written in my notes nearby. And I just love radio. Do you love radio, too?
I love radio. I listen to it all the time. I think it's fantastic. I love to listen to the way people express themselves, right, and the ideas they put out there. And then we can mull those around in our mind and really think about them. I think it's a great medium, great forum.
Yeah, it is. And I appreciate you saying that. We're going to go for a quick break. We'll be right back, everyone. Stay tuned. More coming up with Warren Rustand. He is the author of the book, The Leader Within Us. You're not going to want to miss it. Stay tuned.
Us on Facebook, hit like, and follow us at One Life Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior, broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia, as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. We have an incredible guest today. It is Warren Rustand. He is an entrepreneur, corporate leader, and the Forbes Books author of The Leader Within Us, Mindset Principles and Tools for a Life by Design. He was selected as a White House Fellow in 1973. Warren was a special assistant to the Secretary Secretary of Commerce and co-led the first ever executive level trade mission to the Soviet Union. He also served as appointments and cabinet secretary to President Gerald Ford, a former academic All-American basketball player at the University of Arizona. Rustand has been the CEO of six companies and has served on the board of directors of more than 50 for-profit and nonprofit organizations. He is currently the Dean of Learning for Entrepreneurs Organization EO Global Leadership Academy. His website is warrenrustand.com, and that's R-U-S-T-A-N-D. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show. I'm so excited. I know you can hear it in my voice. I wish I could talk to you for hours, but we only have, you know, about 10 more minutes. So, let me ask you this. You know, why is goal setting so important, Warren?
Well, I think what I found with leaders across many, many industries and fields is that those who drive their life by specific priorities tend to be the most successful. Those who simply live their life spontaneously, off the cuff, distractions, that sort of thing, struggle more with their life. And I think if we can be driven by priorities, then we have a greater opportunity. In the book, I talk about the foundational elements. There are three foundational principles. The first is clarity of vision. Each one of us needs to be able to see with some clarity where we're going with our lives. What outcomes do we actually want? Just like my wife and I decided early in our marriage, we wanted to live on a farm. So we bought a farm, and we've lived on a farm, right? And we need that clarity. Then once we have clarity, the second great principle is certainty of intent, meaning that we will act intentionally on that vision all the time, every day. And then the third is the power of values. Those are the guardrails that keep us on the highway of life, right? We may go a little left and a little right, but those values, those core beliefs and values, keep us centered and keep us going forward. And people know us by the values that we live every day. And so if we can do those three things, clarity of vision, certainty of intent, and the power of values, we will always be driven by our priorities in life, and less distractions will keep us off the path.
Wow, and I love that you refer to it as guardrails, because you can go, you know, off the road a little bit sometimes. And if you do have, you know, those values that are so deeply instilled in you, they will guide you, right?
I agree, and I think they'll bring us back to the center, right? And all of us make mistakes. All of us fail a little bit here and there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we even fail big, but we have the ability to get back on the highway through our core beliefs and values. They will drive us forward, and they will keep us safe if we can just always remember them and come back to them.
Well, what are some of the obstacles that get in the way of reaching your goals?
Well, I think, first of all, it's called social media, right? I think it's the biggest single challenge we face, and we're all guilty of it in different ways. But our ability to discipline ourselves in social media is going to be important. You know, the average text is referred to in about 30 seconds, responded to in about 30 seconds. The average email in about 2.5 minutes, right? If we're spending our day responding to texts and emails, it's unlikely that we're going to get to the big priorities in our life.
Yeah.
We are so easily distracted in today's world. The other thing is this notion of being busy, right? This whole notion of, it's sort of a badge of honor today that the busier we are, the more important we are. And so, you know, you say hi to someone, how you doing? Oh, I'm so busy. I've got so many things going on. Oh, my goodness. So we overschedule ourselves, then we overschedule our children, right? And so we're just embedded in this notion that busyness gets us where we're going, and it doesn't. Don't confuse busyness with productivity.
Oh,
productivity is where we want to be, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But too many people get busy.
Well, you know, I know from your book that when you were 19, you made a list of 100 things that you wanted to accomplish. What types of things were on your list?
Well, you can imagine any 19-year-old writing a list of 100 things, right? Some of them are pretty soft and squishy and dumb, and some of them are pretty grandiose. But every week for the last umpteen years, I have looked at that list, and that's been part of my direction, right? And so at this point in my life, I look at that list and how many have I accomplished? Well, I've actually accomplished 98 of the 100. And there are two that I don't think I'm going to get to in my life. One is I want to be president of the United States.
Oh.
And maybe if I'd have been run last, you know, 3 years ago, I'd have had a chance to win. I don't know, because we proved we'd elect almost anybody at that point. But I think there's a chance that, you know, I had a chance at it. The other is I want to visit every country recognized by the United Nations. The United Nations is a bit tricky because they keep dividing countries and changing names and so forth, so it's a moving target. But I have traveled to 190 countries, and will continue to travel. So I think making lists, setting goals, is absolutely essential to success.
Oh, I do too. I do. One of the principles in your book, Clarity of Vision, that you already talked about, you call it the driver to a successful life. Can you explain that to our listeners?
Yeah, I think without clarity, we can end up going a lot of different places. With clarity, we will go to our destination. Let me give you an example. I was having dinner 25 years ago with three of my mountain climbing friends, and I asked my first friend, what are you going to do with the next 20 years? He said, I'm going to climb mountains. I said, great. I asked my second friend, what are you going to do for the next 20 years? He said, I'm going to try to climb the 7 summits on the 7 continents. I said, that's noble. I asked the third guy, what are you going to do? He said, I'm going to climb Mount Everest by the time I'm 25. He had absolute clarity of what he was going to do. His name is Jamie Clark. He lives in Calgary, Canada. He climbed Everest when he was 21, 23,
wow,
and 25 because he had absolute clarity of where he was going.
Wow.
I think it's so important that clarity will drive us to our success.
I totally agree. Well, that's a great story, by the way, and thank you for sharing it. I have to ask you this. As an entrepreneur myself, do entrepreneurs think differently than others?
We are uniquely wired. There's no question about it. I'm a serial entrepreneur. My dad was as well. We have four of our sons who are in the office with me today. They are each running their own companies. They're all CEOs. I just think we're different. We have a higher tolerance for risk. We are willing to embrace the talents of others and their ability to contribute to our goals and efforts. We are willing to try new things, innovate, and create. We are just different. We just are. And that doesn't make us better or worse. It just, we're uniquely different. And I think we are specially abled in some ways to tolerate risk that other people won't tolerate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. And are there? Do you think there's some vital or core characteristics a successful entrepreneur must have in their toolbox in order to succeed?
One of the things that most entrepreneurs have that are successful is just persistence and determination. They won't quit. They're just dogged in their desire to achieve their goals and objectives. They're willing to adapt, and they're pretty successful at innovation and creativity. But most importantly is they just stick to it. You think of the entrepreneurs that you know. Think of an Elon Musk, for example. Everybody poo-pooed him. There'll never be electric cars. They'll never be accepted. You can't fly to the space station. You'll never have a reusable spacecraft. I mean, those kinds of things. He's done all of those things, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But he did them in the face of criticism and skepticism, but he was just persistent in what he was going to do. He believed so strongly in it. I think those are characteristics. If you look at Bill Gates dropping out of Harvard at 19 years old to create, he said, I want a PC in every home. He said that when the PC hadn't been invented yet. He was the inventor of the PC, right?
Yeah.
You look at Steve Jobs at Apple, same kind of thing, just persistent. So I think the one quality, Bernadette, that I would suggest is that entrepreneurs tend to be very persistent and very disciplined.
Yeah, no, discipline. Oh, that's another one. So I'm referred to as the Barracuda. I never let go of anything, which is one of the reasons I've had such success. And I haven't listened to the naysayers. I mean, and I don't know if you know my entrepreneurial background, but I'm the co-founder of Wingstop, Pizza Patron, Adrift Float Spa, and One Life Radio. And so Wingstop, which is now publicly traded, do you know how many people naysayed that and said, oh, that'll never work? It's one of the most, if not the most successful, you know, restaurant concept in the world.
Right.
So, you know, and we were bombarded with people that were naysayers that says that'll never work. Same with Pizza Patron. How can you get people to pick up pizzas when everyone delivers? Well, if you make a really good product and you sell it cheap enough, yes, they will come and they will pick it up and be better for it, you know, both their pocketbook and their belly. But, you know, what do you say to people out there that maybe are starting a new business, and what do they say to naysayers, or what's the best way to broach that subject with someone who's really telling you not to do it?
Well, first of all, congratulations on your own success, because you were an innovator in the space, right? You
Thank
introduced
you.
Something new and different, and you found an audience for it. That's exactly what entrepreneurs do, is when we have an idea, and I've started several companies, and they're hard, right? They're just hard. They're hard to do, but the success is really rewarding. But we just have to believe so strongly in our idea, first of all. We have to get others on board who similarly believe and are willing to work at it. And then we have to be able to find the capital necessary to support it, right? And when we do those things and stay on the path, right, stay consistent, we can develop almost anything. And American history specifically is just littered with those kinds of successes. Kendra Scott, who's a Texan, right?
Yeah.
She started making jewelry when she was in high school, selling it door to door. Today runs a, $200 million company?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Sarah Blakeslee, who thought that she could create a something that you could wear called Spanx, right? Right? And she creates Spanx, and now it's what? It's her company's valued at over $1 billion.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. The other thing that's really cool is that we see more women entrepreneurs today than we've ever seen before in the history of America.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic to see so many women who are so strong, so capable, demonstrating what they can do in the field of entrepreneurship. It's just exciting.
It is. Well, I think the strong women have always been there. But, you know, I think that a lot of times you just acquiesce, you know, to, you know, if you're it's in a partnership that the man take the lead. And it is changing. And I do think it's very healthy for the country. Anything else that you want our listeners to know, Warren, about entrepreneurship and defeating obstacles that keep us from hitting our goals or achieving our goals?
Well, the first thing is I want them to be sure they listen to you really carefully, because my friends in Southern California and the greater Dallas area and other places listen to you regularly. They think you're fantastic.
Oh, really?
So thank
I didn't
you.
Know that.
I did some research on you, Bernadette, before I tuned in. And I want you to know that you have such a good reputation and you're providing such valuable information to people. I just want to thank you for doing that.
Oh, my gosh.
So I want your listeners to listen to you and what you say very carefully, okay? Important. And the second for your listeners is to be able to take their best ideas and never shrink from them, but to step into that future that they really want to have and be strong and tough. And remember, the greatest leaders do the most difficult things. And that's what your listeners can do if they want to be entrepreneurs.
Wow. I've never been more complimented in my life. My eyes are watery and I've got goosebumps, and I can't thank you enough for saying that, because I am humble and I don't take things for granted. And I am very honored to have you on the air today. And I'm very grateful for the successes that I've had, because, you know, a lot of times success comes down to just being lucky, right? For a lot of people,
yep.
Having their health and things not, you know, happening to their children that would prevent them from, you know, achieving their goals. I mean, there's a lot of things that can go wrong in a person's life, and just thank you so much. I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah. Well, Bernadette, you've been so kind to have me on today. Thank you very much. If you're ever looking for a guest, I would love to come on your show again. You do a fantastic job. And Junior, thank you for your hospitality and the warm way in which you greeted me today. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're
and,
so welcome.
If I can do anything to help either of you, you just let me know.
All right. Gosh, thank you so much. What an honor to meet you, Warren. And thank you so much. I don't even want to go. I don't even know how to end the segment except to just say thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Well, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart as well. Good luck to
All
you
right.
and have a great 2021.
Yes, you too. Well, we'll talk soon. I want you back.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Lots to talk about. All right, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I've literally got tears in my eyes. Thank you so much, Warren Rustin, for jumping on the show with us today. We've got Dewan Bennett coming up next. We're going to be talking about Fear of Commitment Part 2. Stay tuned. You're listening to One Life Radio.
I do my hair toss, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling?
Feeling good as
hell. Hair toss, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling?
Feeling good as hell.
Ooh, child, tired of the bullshit. Gone, dust your shoulders off. Keep it moving, yes, Lord. Trying to get some new in there. Swimwear, going to the pool. Come now, come dry your eyes. You know you a star, you can touch the sky. I know that it's hard, but you have to try. If you need advice, let me simplify.
You're listening to One Life Radio. Make sure you check out our podcast and get to know the show at oneliferadio.com.
I'm still flabbergasted from Warren Rustin, you guys. That was the best compliment I've ever gotten in my life, and I'm very humble, and so I just, you know, I'm still feeling it, and... giddy. But welcome back to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with my partner, Junior, broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia, as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. We've got DeJuan Bennett with us. He's been on the show for a very long time. I love this guy. He is a licensed professional counselor with 2 master's degrees and over 12 years of counseling experience. He currently has his own practice, DeJuan Bennett Counseling, in Dallas, Texas, and he believes that the key to mental and behavioral success is the ability to master self-awareness and emotional control. You can find DeJuan on Instagram at d.bennett_counseling or his website, dbennettcounseling.com. How are you doing today, DeJuan?
I'm fine, Bern. How about you?
I'm good. I'm really good. It's been a great day so far. but it's so great to have you with us, DeJuan. It always is. And today we're talking about the fear of commitment, part 2. Okay, so we're continuing our conversation on fear of commitment, focusing on relationships. So do most people with a fear of commitment recognize that they have a problem?
It's funny, Bern, that you asked that question, because I think in my early stages as a therapist, I was very naive to believe that all these things that people have that they're experiencing has to be common sense, like they have to know it. And the realities are that, you know, when people talk about, you know, relationship anxiety or relationship phobia or what we call commitment issues, a lot of times people don't recognize that, right? Because there's aspects of I've always been this way, or I've been in situations where I have been hurt. So it's not me, it's you. I think typically that self-awareness that's needed to understand that you have issues with commitment or you have fear of a relationship, I think a lot of times people are unaware of it because they're kind of unaware of that that's a thing in general.
Yeah, well, have you ever had a fear of commitment yourself personally?
I believe so, Bern. There was a point in time where, you know my story, I've told you guys on the radio that I had a daughter who passed away while I was in college. And during that time, for about 3 or 4 years, I didn't want anyone to get close enough to hurt me. So, you know, because I've lost, then I understood what hurt was like. And yeah, I didn't want my heart to be broken. So for a while, there was definitely some fear of commitment issues, but my wife was able to bring me out of that.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's so nice. Listen to you giggling. Like, you guys are still dating. I love it. I love it. And so, you know, so, but why do people get so fearful? And I really never thought about that after a loss, but it makes perfect sense. You know, and I think after you go through a divorce, especially if there's been some sort of betrayal or not even mm-hmm. a marriage, but just a long-term relationship and you've been betrayed. But it's harder for men to get over that than women, isn't it?
It's difficult, right? You know, the question is, you know, why do people have this fear of loss? And I think it's for very reasons. You know, being in this relationship, being with someone, giving them your all just to see it not working, that can be a contributing factor. For most people, it starts even at a younger age, though, Bern, before you get into a romantic relationship. It's your early relationship that you have with your family. You know, did you feel like your family committed to you? Did you have a lot of people in your family who lied to you, who made promises and never followed through? Or did you watch your parents engage in a relationship where, you know, mom was probably dishonest or dad was out cheating, to where now you don't really believe that, you know, an honest, committed relationship exists because you've never really seen one. So it happens. And yes, for men, a lot of times we can take hurt as a sense of betrayal on our sense of self or our ego, right? Who we believe we are, who we lead people to believe we are. So we can take it as a shot to our ego, which causes us to sometimes act out in ways that can be destructive to relationships and things of that nature, multiple partners and things of that such.
Yeah. Junior, have you ever had a fear of commitment? I think we asked you this last time, but I don't remember what you said.
Relationship wise, not really. I mean, yeah. Me and my wife, we dated, you know, 2 years, then we got engaged. We were engaged for 2 years, then we got married. I mean, I kind of knew within like a couple weeks of dating her that she was it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
before her, I only had like 2 other girlfriends. Like, I was never really that person that was, you know, once I found somebody, I stuck with them, and I always had long relationships, you know, and then my long relationships with my wife. So,
yeah. I love that, though. And what is that? So does that say something about a person? Because I'm the same way. Like, I'm not a big dater. I never have been. Even when I had, you know, periods, long periods of, you know, just, you know, being alone. And I was fine with that. So, but is that, what does that mean if someone's like that? If they,
if they're all in, right? I think there's just, there's a difference, right? Some people, they have a healthy relationship that they've witnessed growing up. And as a result of them, they yearn for that. They want that so bad. You know, a lot of us, a lot of problems in relationships is that we kind of romanticize relationships. But for some people, they don't romanticize it. They actually had a good image or a good view of what relationships look like. If you came from a two-parent home and your family was surrounded with love and support and things of that nature, a lot of times you're more likely to settle down a lot early. You have a better job of understanding what you want out of a relationship, and settling down is the goal. There are also people who, for them, settling down feels like they're giving up their freedom. So although it may feel like they have commitment issues, a lot of it just feels like they don't have an understanding of what a relationship may look like, so they're less inclined. Junior was fortunate enough to kind of have an early understanding of what he was looking for, and he was able to find that person. And once he found that person, he stopped the search. So often, unfortunately, because of FOMO, failure of missing out, people, although they have somebody that's good in front of them, they continue the search. It's kind of like having a job, but you're still getting notifications and stuff on Indeed. It's kind of like the fear of missing out on something more special.
Yeah. Should people have a checklist, like whatever's the most important to you? I don't know what that would be, Junior. What was most important for you? I'm really bringing you in here today. what was important for you in a significant other or in a marriage? What were you looking for? And did you have like a little checklist in your mind?
Not really. I mean, she was just, I don't know. She was really, I mean, I wanted somebody that was pretty. I wanted somebody that liked to go out and have fun. I wanted somebody that wanted children. I wanted somebody that also, you know, was looking for a long-term relationship. Yeah. And, you know, I think we took the time to find those things out about each other. You know, we like I said, we dated for 2 years. We got engaged. She wanted to get married within 6 months. We waited 2 years. We had a two-year engagement, and then we got married. So we really, before we moved in with each other, I think we kind of, we found out if we had the things on our mental checklist, I guess. Uh-huh, you know, I don't think I never like wrote anything down, but I knew what I was looking for. And I took the time, found she had everything. And, you know, that was it.
Apparently she did, too. Right. Right, Dewan?
I hope so.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, values is always something that should be part of your checklist. Do you guys have shared values? Do you guys kind of want the same things out of life? Or do you have the same vision for life? I think that definitely should always be part of the checklist. Some of the times those superficial things such as body type and height and things of that nature, man, those things can change. And, you know, those things don't last as long as kind of being with somebody that you feel like, hey, we share the same values in life. We want the same things in life. We have the same outlook on life. That tends to be something that you always want to have a part of a checklist. There's nothing wrong with a checklist. Just make sure it's realistic.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, so, you know, what are some actions or thoughts that signify a fear of commitment? Like, what does that look like?
It can come off in multiple ways. You have some people who they just don't date seriously. They're not wanting to move past the casual stage in relationships. So things are really good until it gets to a point where they should be taking the next step. Once they get to that next step, then they start to look for reasons on why this person is not a good fit for them. Oh, this person's always 5 minutes late when we're supposed to meet up for a date. Oh, I don't like his sister. Or, you know, this person, they only want 5 kids. I want 10. You're looking for small things, right? Usually these small things that pretty much don't really have any merit on regards of what's going on in a relationship now to get rid of a person. Or you may spend a lot of time questioning the relationships. Do they really love me? What happens next? Am I ready for this? So those are some things you struggle with. And then there's the aspect that's really important. You don't want to be emotionally attached to the person. Every time the person tells you they want to spend time with you, you find an excuse to kind of not spend time with them. When that person tells you that they may love you, you start to question the relationship at that point because you feel overwhelmed with emotions and feelings. And so you think that the feelings of enjoying spending time with this person and, you know, this wanting to talk to this person is a warning sign that says, hey, maybe they're not for me. So you're confusing happy emotions and happy feelings with a sign of anxiety and fear. And so that can also be a sign that, you know, you have commitment issues.
Yeah, those three words, I love you, right? Those are, we're going to talk about that after the break. I've got some great questions for you, everyone. Stay tuned. More coming up with Dewan Bennett. You're listening to One Life Radio.
us on social media at One Life Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior and DeJuan Bennett. We are live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. DeJuan Bennett is a licensed professional counselor with two master's degrees and over 12 years of counseling experience. He is currently he currently has his own practice, DeJuan Bennett Counseling, here in Dallas, Texas, and he believes that the key to mental and behavioral success is the ability to master self-awareness and emotional control. You can find DeJuan on Instagram at d.bennett_counseling or his website, dbennettcounseling.com. We're talking about fear of commitment, part two. Right before the break, you mentioned, we were talking about, you know, when someone says, I love you. So that's a really big deal when someone says that. And I've had some crazy things happen to me along those lines, DeJuan. I remember being on a second date with a guy and he told me, I love you. And I was like, what? You know, what? This guy is crazy. I'm not dating him, you know? But, you know, what happens? What do you do when someone says, I love you too soon and you're not ready to commit?
I mean, I think that, you know, people are allowed to feel whatever they feel, although sometimes those feelings may come off as premature. If a person has a understanding of what love means to them and they tell you that they love you, then they love you. But don't feel obligated to have to feel as if you have to say it back to them. I think the problem with the I love you statement or the I want to be with you statement is that we feel just because someone has arrived at a destination before us, we have to quickly and speed up the process to meet them there. And I think don't feel that you need to have to say I love you just because someone says that. You can simply reply by saying thank you. You can simply ask questions like, hey, well, what does that mean to you? Or you can simply say, hey, I'm not there yet. But the fact that you're there, that gives me some hope of where, you know, you view the relationship and things of that nature. So, I mean, I think that it's okay to ask questions about what that means for a person, because let's be honest, Bern, relationships are difficult, and different people may have different definitions on what love means. They may even have a different definition on what dating and relationships and marriage looks like. So having all those conversations about what that looks like is important.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, so what is a reasonable amount of time that somebody could, you know, saying the words, those three words, I love you, like what's a reasonable amount of time before, you know, that should be, you know, on the table, if you will?
I don't know if it's something that's constrained to a certain amount of time, you know, because obviously maybe there is something about you that reminds them of someone they truly love, right? And that's typically the case. The same way that we can have triggers in relationship that remind us of someone who has hurt us, we can have triggers that remind us of someone that we love. So if they had a relationship with someone who they really cared for, that person was nurturing and supportive, or you remind them of their grandparent in a way that you're very nurturing and supportive, that can make a person feel like they love you simply because you mimic the behaviors or you look like someone they love. So I think for different people, it can happen. I think that you should always ask questions if you feel like it's too soon, right? Because you want to know, well, what about me makes you say you love me? And then you have a better understanding. But I don't know if I would put a timetable on it. But I definitely, if I've only been on two dates with someone and they're telling me they love me, I would probably have more questions for them.
Yeah, or look for the door, right?
Now, that could be commitment issues if you're running, though, right? Remember.
I don't know. But, you know, some people will use fear of commitment as an excuse to get out of a relationship, too. So how do you know if it's a fear of commitment or if they're just not into you?
I think one of the clear signs that it is the fear of commitment is they're looking for things to be wrong. They're looking to sabotage the relationship. So they're kind of almost making things problems that aren't problems, and that they know that they're thinking about you, but because they're thinking about you, that's making them anxious. When you know it's just, I don't want to be with you, is because you don't find yourself missing a person when they're not around. You don't find yourself thinking about a person. They're kind of just occupying your time. I always tell people, don't confuse attention with intentions, meaning I could sit on the phone all night with you, Bern, because I'm bored, or on a dating app and text you all day, and now you feel like, because I'm giving you attention, I have intentions for you. When the reality is you're just occupying time, I'm bored, it's COVID, once the world opens back up, you won't see me again. So I think that gives you an indication if it's just a commitment issue, or you really are not into the person, because do you desire to talk to that person or think about them when they're not around?
Mm-hmm. This is great. This is great talk, by the way. And a lot of people, you know, I don't think they know. And so as a therapist, do you see a lot of patients who seek help for a fear of commitment? And if so, what drives them to seek help?
I think more than you would know. One of the things that I used to say when I first became a therapist, I would never work with couples. I'm not doing it. There's a lot of arguments. I'm just not dealing with them. And then as I started to, you know, practice more and get more information, I started to realize that a lot of people in their relation or in life suffer from issues with relationships.
Wow.
So whether they have issues with commitment to work or family members, they struggle. So to answer the question, yes, I see a lot of people. And I think for the most part, they've been hurt before, or they don't know what a healthy relationship looks like. So they kind of don't have a blueprint to go after.
I unfortunately have to interrupt you because of music's been playing for a couple of seconds. We need a part three here. So we're going to go. Dewan, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. We've got lots more to talk about when it comes to commitment, fear of commitment specifically. Everyone, thank you so much for listening. You get one body, you get one mind, and you get one life. Get out there today and make the most of it.